from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
And the Giants have won the pennant. 9-0 the final in Game 7.
After facing elimination in six straight games, the San Francisco Giants beat the St. Louis Cardinals 9-0 last night to win the National League Championship Series. The Giants now head to the World Series to face the Detroit Tigers, and we'll discuss the Giants' victory and preview the series after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. And last night at AT&T Park, behind the pitching of Matt Cain, the San Francisco Giants were victorious over last year's world champion St. Louis Cardinals, shutting out the Cardinals 9-0 and clinching their second National League pennant over the past 3 years. We want to discuss last night's decisive win, which earned the Giants a berth in the upcoming World Series against the American League pennant-winning Detroit Tigers, a matchup which begins with the first game of a best-of-seven series in San Francisco this Wednesday evening. And joining us, first of all, to talk about last night and what's ahead, President and CEO of the San Francisco Giants, Larry Baer. Larry, congratulations and welcome.
Thank you so much. It was one of those sort of epic nights. And there's so many different side stories and craziness. And I'll tell you what, the way the game ended was fitting to our season. It ended in a monsoon in October in San Francisco.
Well, it also ended with Scudero catching a pop fly by the guy who bashed him, Halliday.
That is right, and that's amazing. And Marco Scudero, who was the MVP of the series, as you say, caught the ball in the rain. I don't know if you saw the shot. He looked up. It was almost like he was looking up at the heavens with his mouth open, I think catching some water in his mouth. And with this exultation, this sort of just complete euphoria.
It was beatified almost. It was like something you would think of sanctioning from the heavens.
It really was. His nickname, by the way, the players gave Marco Scudero this nickname when he came over to the Giants. Do you know what that is?
I do not know what that is.
His nickname is Blockbuster.
Oh,
you know why?
No,
because he was acquired the same day that the Dodgers made their deal. And so Marco Scudero, I think, was a $2 million add to our payroll the same day the Dodgers added $271 million to their payroll.
Yeah,
so
makes
the players nicknamed Blockbuster because he was our Blockbuster.
Makes you guys like you and Sabian look like geniuses.
Well, not trying to say it that way, but the players said, okay, they went out and they got Beckett, Crawford, Gonzalez, they got all those guys, and it was all the media they were getting around that. And so barely you had to read in the little transaction section about Marco Scudero. It barely made it to the fine print.
Yeah, I'm sure the Rockies are really happy about that deal. And I'm also wondering at this point, and I've got to ask you directly, when you match up man for man the Giants against the Cincinnati Reds or the Cardinals, I mean, did you really expect what we have now?
You know, it's really interesting, Michael, and this, I think, happens in a lot of other worlds beside professional sports. Desire, drive, caring for one another in a sort of group setting. If you're a business or you're any kind of enterprise, you're a school, whatever the group enterprise is, means a lot. And it gets to, people call it chemistry or they call it character, you call it a lot of different things. But that's, whatever you call that, that's what this team has. And I'm so proud of them and the people that are more behind the scenes, the manager, Bruce Bochy, the coaches, the general manager, Brian Sabian, and his staff, because they all operate that way. And so I guess you're right. I mean, pound for pound, if you put it on paper, you say, look at career statistics, this would not be a team that you predict would be playing tomorrow night in Game 1 of the World Series. But on the other hand, the games aren't played on paper.
Well, I think Bruce Sabian said it best, this is a team that hates to lose more than it likes to win.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing was, when we were down 2-0 and going to Cincinnati, there was just this rallying cry. Some of it's been reported. Hunter Pence was really involved in it. And there was just this thing that we care. We're going to play for each other because we want to stay with each other. We are not ready to stop.
Yeah, Pence has been given a good deal of credit because of his almost evangelical fervor in the locker room, at least from the way it's been characterized. But also, we've been hearing a lot about what we talked about just a moment ago. That is the effect of the team of Holliday's brush up with, I'm using a kind of a light term to describe it. It was really a smash up with Scudero.
Well, I think that sometimes when those kinds of plays happen, and whether I'm not going to say it was a late play or a dirty play, I don't know, but if that's what the players thought it was, it could be a rallying cry. It's sort of like statements, the typical clubhouse bulletin board statements that get teams going. And I think that Scudero is such a likable person in that sense because he's one of these guys that is not 6'5" and he's not 230 pounds. He is kind of like you and me. I mean, the same build, whatever he is, you know, 5'11" and 195 pounds or whatever. I mean, just making that up, I think that's about what he is. But he knows how to play the game, and he takes a lot of desire and heart. We've seen players like this over the years. Maybe it's a, you know, Robbie Thompson type, people like that, that make the most of their abilities. And he's honed the game. And he's never played in a World Series, and he's 36 years old, and this means everything to him. And those are the players you really root for.
You going to send special scouts to Venezuela?
Yeah, we have 5 Venezuelan players, which is really interesting. And you talk to the players, and it's really it's a tough situation. And your kind of show talks about this more than most sports shows that we're on sometimes, that it's the conditions there are very difficult, and so it's hard to go back. I've talked to some of the players, and between kidnappings and between the targeting of wealthy American players, quote unquote wealthy, they're viewed that way certainly by the people in Venezuela. It's so unstable there that they feel very blessed to be able to come and play baseball here, and most of them end up living here in the off season. I know Marco makes his home in Florida with his family.
One more question, Larry, and that is, you know, certainly a lot can be said about the extraordinary pitching, Vogelsong, and the bullpen. I mean, without Wilson, the bullpen nevertheless did extraordinarily well, and the performances, of course, of Matt Cain, everything. But talk about blockbusters. I mean, what you got out of Zito really kind of turned the tide, didn't it?
Well, that's another side story, is that here's a guy, and I have to say about Barry, just put the money aside and think about the human factor. He was getting just pummeled by everyone, the press, the fans, in his first couple of years with us. And through that period, Barry, and I've seen a lot of athletes operate differently, Barry said, this is on me. I need to get better. He didn't say this is the pitching coach, this is the manager, this is the ballpark, this is the league, you know, all the different excuses that could be used. He said, I got to get better. It's on me. And at the same time, he was a great teammate when he was left off the 2010 roster in the postseason. He was there at every game rooting them on. We landed Washington, D.C. to play a game just typically during the season. Where does he go? He goes to Walter Reed Hospital because he has a Strikeout for Troops charity. He's just a really, really terrific guy. And so to see him save the season in Game 5 in St. Louis was just a flash of bright light on the whole organization and the whole clubhouse.
Well, you are euphoric, as well you should be, and this is a wonderful victory, and we're all very happy, and I congratulate you. This is the 20th National League pennant for the Giants. I want to emphasize pennant, because Marty Lurie and I say we don't like these letters, we like the word pennant.
And a real very, very quick, to close up, the line drive, it's funny, and this is points been made, I think, today. You know, it's funny how we go back, the last 7th game of a series was 1962, Giants and Yankees, and when Willie McCovey's line drive went right into, it was just a direct bullet into Bobby Richardson's glove. Contrast that with Hunter Pence's 3 times hitting the bat, spotty English ball that eluded the shortstop yesterday, and you see that maybe things have come full circle for the fortunes of Giants fans, or at least the way the ball bounces.
Yeah, somebody said Hunter Pence should get 3 hits for that. Should be scored 3 hits. Well, again, Larry, congratulations.
Very thanks, Michael. We'll see you at the World Series.
Larry Baer, President and CEO of the San Francisco Giants. And let me tell you who else is with us to talk about this victory and exult in it. Marty Lurie is, of course, Giants pregame and postgame host for KNBR 680. Marty, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Dan Faust is here, author and freelance writer. His book, Giants Past and Present, one of the best books out on the Giants. Dan, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And Mark Purdy is with us by phone this morning, sports columnist of the San Jose Mercury News and Bay Area News Group, joining us from down in the South Bay. Mark Purdy, good to have you.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And let me begin, Marty Lurie, with you. I mean, there are a lot of NPR, KQED listeners who don't necessarily follow baseball with the usual passion that we do. But tell us something just about the odds here, the unexpected odds here. I mean, for a team to come back as they did against Cincinnati and St. Louis, pretty exceptional, to put it mildly.
Well, it's never happened in this era of the division series and the championship series to be down 0-2 and lose the first two at home, then to come back with 3 straight, then 3-1, of course, in the 7-game series. So it's historic what this ball club did. But as I like to say, these things can happen. Baseball's different than the other sports, football, basketball, hockey. You have the same players playing against each other every day. Baseball's different. They change the most important player every day, and that's the pitcher. And if you look at this Cardinals series, the Giants' pitching of Zito, Vogelsong, and Kane was so dominant, they gave up one run in those last 3 games. That's how things like that happen.
And it's sort of unexpected. I mean, the old cliche is how much of the game is pitching, 3/4 of it or 2/3. I suppose it depends who you talk to. But with really, we had some help from Lincecum, but he wasn't the starter. He wasn't the Cy Young Award winner. And the same thing can be said about Baumgarten. It didn't come through necessarily in the postseason. So you really had 3 starters who were exceptional, but who were not necessarily the rotation. I mean, think about Humbaby just a couple of years ago, a very different kind of pitching mound.
Well, they came out of sort of nowhere. The big guys did not come through. But for the Cardinals, they did not pitch as well either. They really got only one well-pitched game in the 7-game series. So the Giants really outpitched them. But when Larry was talking about the team, The team takes on a personality. It's like a child taking on the personality of the parents. And you have to look at Bruce Bochy, Ron Wotus, and the coaching staff, and just the type of team they put together. And that's the kind of team that was on the field. And they wouldn't quit. But they had to play perfect baseball in 6 elimination games, and they did it. And that's the story of this playoff so far.
Yeah, Dan Faust, it's looking like Bruce Bochy's he's being heralded as a Hall of Famer manager at this point.
You have to think about it. I mean, the guy has got a great track record, and I think, you know, much like in 2010 when he won the World Series with what, you know, the famous crew of cast-offs and misfits, and then, as you said, he had this fabulous pitching staff. And so it's interesting to hear Marty talk about the personality of the team, because this year it's a very different personality. They've changed the whole lineup except for Buster Posey. You know, every position has a new player from different from 2010, and it's not the wild men. It's not Aubrey Huff and his thong and Brian Wilson and his beard, but it's a
and
much
it's not
more,
Cody Ross
and know. Not Cody Ross. So it's a much more or Pat Burrell. I mean, these guys who were so colorful, and this is a much more workaday group. You know, they're I think more defined by the Buster Posies, the sort of straight ahead, hardworking Southern boy, and yet still, it's the same thing. Bochy, it seems like you give him whatever he's got, and he doesn't have the dominant pitching that he had then, and yet he still manages to win.
Well, you mentioned Posey, and of course he had that great grand slam, but a disappointing, I'm sorry to put this wrinkle on it, but a disappointing performance in terms of the St. Louis games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know, and maybe Mark or Marty would have more insight into that, but I mean, one theory is that he's just tired. During the season, that's another thing that Bochy did so well, was resting Buster, giving him time at first base. He's caught all but, I think, one of the playoff games. It is hard work back there.
There's a big onus on him. But, of course, in fact, maybe Mark Purdy, you can give us some light on this. I think they're pitching him very differently in St. Louis, weren't they?
Well, Yes, they were. I mean, here's what happens. You know, the more at-bats you have in the season, but also in the playoffs, you know, you have the best – it's not just the best teams on the field. It's the best organizations. Keep that in mind. You know, and that goes from the top, the general manager, through the scouts. And these two teams probably have the best advanced scouts in the world. So they are charting, particularly the last month of the season. They send scouts out to watch the teams they might be playing in the playoffs. So it's possible the scouts, you know, charting Buster Posey have found something. Now, I haven't sat down and looked videotape, but I think it's quite possible they found something that they're pitching to with Buster. But the other thing is, and I do want to give him a break, I mean, he's very much the gravitational center of that clubhouse, and that's a lot of work. That means, you know, he's got to sit back there, and he's not just doing physical work, he's doing mental work, working with the pitchers, because he has to have the scouting reports on all the other team's hitters, because he's calling the pitches. So it's a lot of mental work, too. He's still a very young man, but I think he's doing a fine job defensively, which is a big, big part of this and a big, big part of the reason they won won this series. I mean, Marty was talking about the history of that first round. I was looking up last night. The Giants have never won a best-of-seven series when trailing 3-1 in postseason franchise history, ever, going back 100 years or whatever. This was the fifth time they fell behind 3-1 in a best of seven, but the first time they'd ever come back to do it. So it is an achievement.
And what about the bullpen, Dan? I mean, they got much more out of this bullpen than they ever would have anticipated.
Yeah, it's really, you know, and the bullpen, everybody has had to step up this year with Wilson getting hurt and losing him on the second game of the season. They've all had their roles. They're used to a steady, defined roles, and that everybody's had to shake it up. And then, again, Santiago Casilla wound up going out at midseason, and they had to shake it up again. So everybody seems ready to pitch at any time, and they've just really risen to the occasion.
Marty, what about the bottom of the order? There was a lot of talk about just not being strong enough and not getting enough out of it, and yet Pence didn't really come through that. I mean, he had that broken bad hit and had a home run, but I mean, hovered around 125 average or something like that. So there was concern about the bottom of the – but they got a lot more out of Belton Crawford perhaps than they even anticipated.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And what Mark talked about with Posey, you know, Pence didn't give him that protection. So what the St. Louis pitchers did, they pounded him inside, and then they threw pitches away, and he was frustrated, and he would chase him. He wasn't taking his walks. And part of that is because Pence couldn't protect him. But I like to call the last three my kids. And I got calls all season long, middle of the season, July, and they're criticizing Crawford and Belt and Blanco and whatever. And I said, leave them alone. Let them play. And, Michael, if you look at these rallies that happened in this postseason, and Tony La Russa always likes to talk about the crooked numbers in an inning. You know, if you give up the runs with crooked numbers, you're in trouble. Every time they got into a crooked number, it was either Belt, Blanco, or Crawford getting in the middle of it. Now, three left-handed hitters, they're growing up before our eyes, and the pitching of Cincinnati, all right-handed, St. Louis, all right-handed, Detroit, all right-handed, and I expect these three left-handed hitters to be in the middle of it again, and that's baseball.
We also saw some really exceptional defense in this series, Mark Purdy. You want to comment on that? I mean, I was just thinking about that Crawford catch last night. But
Yeah. Those are the kind of things that slip through the cracks, and that's why baseball is such a fascinating game. You never know at what moment in the baseball game is going to be the fulcrum, the turning point. And last night, I would say the two big turning points were that the catch that Crawford, I don't know if he can dunk a basketball or not, but he really
quite
elevated.
A jump there, yeah.
Yeah, he really elevated and made a catch of that line drive. It's such a key moment. If that goes over his head, I think, you know, a couple runs come in, and it's a whole different kind of feel for that early part of the game. And then the second one was that fluky thing that you already talked about where Pence broke his bat and the ball kind of bounced his bat three times, which in golf gets you penalized, but in baseball gets you to the World Series. that play, which broke open that inning, was the other moment. And that's why you got to pay attention the whole time. You never know when it's going to be it. But defense, you know, everybody talks about the great game Barry Zito pitched in Game 5. And that is absolutely true. You know, one of my favorite sayings in baseball is from Earl Weaver, the manager, crusty old manager, former manager of the Baltimore Orioles. And after that Game 4 where the Giants fell behind 3-1, and somebody asked me, "Well, do you think the Cardinals now have the momentum? Are going to close this out?" And I said, "I always remember the quote from Earl Weaver, which is momentum is the next day's starting pitcher," and it's so absolutely true. Zito comes out as very aggressive, but if you remember that game, those guys made a lot of great defensive plays behind him. After the game, I asked Zito, "Can you rank those?" He says, "I can't rank all of them. They would be like all number one." It was, you know, Pence made a great catch behind him. I think Scooterman made a play. Someone else made a great defensive play in that game. I can't remember. Maybe help me out, Marty. But those defensive moments are the most probably. I mean, they do get on the highlight reel. But when we talk about games, we tend to talk about the offense more than the defense, which is not fair, I think. I think defense, I think when you have two teams like the Cardinals and the Giants, which were actually pretty evenly matched, playing proper baseball, making the defensive plays correctly, is probably what's going to win those games. And if you look at the Cardinals, they couldn't get out of their own way. I mean, some of those, remember the one game where the pitcher turns around, hits the bag, you know, they just couldn't get out of their own way. They could not play defense as well as the Giants. I think ultimately, as I step back, that was probably maybe the real factor in the series.
Well, but if you get 14 hits and get 500 average, you're going to be the MVP for a series like Scudero.
Well, yeah, but, you know, his defensive role was a big part of this, too.
Yeah, no, he played really exceptional defense as well. I'm going to actually open the phone lines now and invite those of you who are listening to not only maybe talk about the joy, not in Mudville, but here in San Francisco, and your thoughts about, we're going to talk also with Marty, Dan, and Mark about the prospects of the Giants against the Tigers. You may want to weigh in on that as well. But we'd like to hear from you, your thoughts about, well, the exultation of this pennant victory, and they won the flag, by the way. I keep emphasizing that. We're old school, Lurie and I, so we want to emphasize that or highlight it. Our toll-free number is available, and you can call us now at 866-733-6786. We welcome your contributions to this conversation, so feel free to join us. Again, it's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org. Particularly like to hear from some of you who were at the game last night and have some impressions to share about what you saw, other than the wetness that came down at the end. We welcome your questions and comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment, or you can go to our Facebook page. And so, Marty Lurie, how does it look with Detroit?
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting series. A couple of things. One, the National League has home field advantage, so there'll be four games potentially in San Francisco. That means no DH for the American League, and that's always a huge advantage for the National League. So that's the first thing. Second thing is Justin Verlander's a terrific pitcher, but he can't pitch all the games. Tiger bullpen is really a problem. Now, the Cincinnati bullpen, the Cardinal bullpen, outstanding, and the Giants had to work through those games. The Tiger bullpen, Jim Leland, has had such trouble. He doesn't know who the closer is going to be. He said he was going to put a suggestion box outside his door and let people put suggestions in there. That's how messed up they are. You don't generally see that in a playoff. So, in today's world of pitching, they're not going to go nine innings every game. This one may depend on the Tiger bullpen as much. So I think the Giants are in it. All right-handed pitching again against the Giants. A lot of strikeout power pitchers for the Tigers. I think this is a seven-game series. I don't think anyone's going down 3-1 in this one. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth series.
Well, they also have a Cabrera. We don't have a Cabrera in the Giants anymore, but they have a Cabrera who really is shall we say, well, historic. I mean, you know, when was the last time somebody won all three?
Carl Yastrzemski, 1967. Yeah, triple crown.
Well, feel free to join this conversation. We're talking baseball. San Francisco Giants beat the St. Louis Cardinals last night, won the National League Championship Series. That is the pennant. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also join us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum or on Facebook, or post any questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment talking with Marty Lurie, Dan Faust, and Mark Purdy. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the San Francisco Giants and their victory over the St. Louis Cardinals. After facing elimination in six straight games, they went on to win the National League Championship Series, and they now head to the World Series to face the Detroit Tigers. We're previewing the series. We're talking about last night's game, and we're certainly inviting you to join us. We spoke earlier with Larry Baer, the president and CEO of the Giants, and with us in studio, Marty Lurie, Giants pregame and postgame host at KNBR 680. Dan Fost, who is author and freelance writer. His book is Giants Past and Present. And with us by phone from the South Bay, sports columnist for the San Jose Mercury News and Bay Area News Group, Mark Purdy. And again, feel free to join the program. We also want to hear perhaps what your thoughts are on this Detroit and San Francisco matchup, and it's going to be a good one, Marty Lurie. Huh?
Oh, I think so. Anytime you have power pitching in October, this is what World Series baseball is all about. And you're looking at Max Scherzer and Anibal Sanchez, who's given the Giants trouble when he was with the Marlins. Doug Fister and Verlander, they're coming with the power. But then again, you look at the Giants. That first game matchup, Verlander, maybe the best pitcher in baseball, against Barry Zito. Trying to keep people off balance, trying to do what he did against the St. Louis Cardinals. A fascinating story. The big question will be Game 3, because the Game 3 starter is the Game 7 starter. Matt Cain, Vogelsong, both will have the proper rest for Game 3. I think it may be Vogelsong.
And when you think about Zito, you normally, Dan Fuss, don't necessarily think, until he did that performance, exceptional performance and outstanding in the last game with the Cardinals, a game that turned things, I should say. And yet, you know, I remember before that game, people were saying, well, Zito only throws the ball about 80 miles an hour. You know, how's he going to be really that effective? But he is effective at throwing and mixing up batters, and really in that game particularly.
Yeah, and I think the other key with Zito is his head. I mean, you know, he's very much in his head, and Kit, does he have his confidence going? Is he going to, all of a sudden, he starts walking people, then he starts laying in these meatballs, and I think that so it was great when the Giants defense backed him up, even in that game against the Reds. Like Mark said, there were some phenomenal plays. There was a key double play that got out of a jam, and it gives him the confidence to keep going. So I think that's so important, is for him now to have that confidence. The Giants have now won 13 straight games that Zito has started. Even that horrific start against the Reds, they still managed to come back and win it. You know, great relief effort from Lincecum. And I'm assuming, Marty, that Lincecum will be ready for that role in the World Series.
Well, that's a good question. I think he pitches in Game 2. I think Madison Bumgarner, the lefty, is a little tired right now. And I would assume Lincecum goes in Game 2 right here in San Francisco. And many of the Tigers have not seen him before, and he still has that strikeout pitch. And I'd assume Lincecum goes in Game 2.
Let me, before we go to callers and listeners, Mark Purdy, just get your sense. When you match up Bruce Bochy against Jim Leyland, who's looking for a championship in both leagues, how does it come down?
Well, you know, I think this is going to be a fascinating series to watch from that strategic standpoint. These two guys know how to run a game. And I was looking this up. This is Bochy's sixth postseason appearance as a manager. He's taken six teams to the playoffs. That's tied for second most among active managers. The only guy who has taken more teams to the playoffs than Bochy is Jim Leland, seven. So these are of the active managers, these are the two guys that have the most playoff experience. And you manage a little differently in the playoffs. You kind of gauge your staffs, and you gauge your defensive moves a lot differently because you know you have a certain limited number of games. And I'm really curious to see how this all plays out strategic-wise. I think these two guys are old baseball hands. They certainly respect each other, and you're not going to see any antics or gamesmanship. You're just going to see good baseball thinking playing itself out on the field every night. I think baseball fans that really like the inside baseball are going to sit and devour this like a good meal.
Well, I've got a listener who also asks, what do you think about the fact that Matheny was managing? He said, I don't want to take anything away from the Giants' victory, but how much of it is due to mismanagement by Matheny? I mean, it's not Tony La Russa.
Well, you know, he's not Tony La Russa, but he's a good baseball guy. Something happened in those last three games that he let it get away from him. I thought early on last night, and we don't want to get too baseball geeky here, but I thought he should have made some moves sooner to get his better bullpen guys in earlier when things were starting to fall apart there in the early innings. And instead, he kind of went with the guys he usually puts in early in the games. So I would have put some of my better bullpen pitchers in there sooner to get stop the Giants what they were doing offensively any way possible. And maybe that's just lack of experience. But that said, he did get them this far, and no one is expecting the Cardinals to come this far either. They lost their best player, Albert Pujols, last year. I mean, he deserves a lot of credit for getting the Cardinals this far, but would you say that he had as good a series managing as Bruce Bochy? You would not.
Marty Lurie.
No, Mark hit it right on the head. The phrase I used, Mike Matheny watched the game, Bruce Bochy managed the game. And that's really what happened. And Mark's right, a great year for Mike Matheny. But you have to deal differently in the playoffs. There's no time for tomorrow. You've got to get that game today. And consistently, I think even with Dusty Baker and the Reds, I think they sort of let the Giants back into this thing, not using Chapman for two innings in that game that went 10 innings, and the Giants beat Broxton. But for Matheny, every big inning got out of control, and he was waiting for the next day. So I say he watched the game very well, but Bochy managed the game.
Well, from our research department, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. last night, when both the debate and the Giants game were on, more people were watching the Giants than the presidential debate in the San Francisco market. I just wanted to get that on the record here. Also,
that would include Mike Matheny.
Hey, it was a better story. Come on.
From rally fedoras to rally horses, by the way, we've compiled our favorite tweets from the National League Championship Series. You can see them on our website, kqed.org/forum, and send us your favorite Orange October tweet to @KQED Forum. A bunch of your emails that I want to get to here and some website comments, but let's start with our callers. And Marilyn, you're first. Hi.
Hi. I just want you guys to comment on the fan base and how it plays a part in the powerhouse that is the Giants. And you talked about the 2010 team being a wild bunch. But it's the same fan base, and I kind of believe that that's like a 10th player on the field.
You may want to comment on how the fans played in. I mean, certainly the players kept talking about the fans and how important they were.
Well, I'll jump in. I thought it was electric. I really did. I've been to a lot of sporting events, and the atmosphere last night was electric in the park. And then with the rains coming at the end, it was just a surreal experience. These fans make a difference. The players will tell you that, especially pitchers warming up in the bullpen in the visiting side. The fans are on them in a good-natured way, but the way fans should be.
But forgive me, Marty, for a while there, they were doing better on the road than they were at home games.
Well, that's because of the ballpark. They have a lot more confidence. They don't have big home run hitters on this ball club, so they get into the smaller parks on the road, and they relax a little more, and they hit the ball a lot better.
Is Sandoval starting to look like a big home run hitter?
Yes, he is. Sandoval is hot, and that's a big turnaround for this ball club because, as you pointed out, Posey and Pence didn't do much. Sandoval got hot. Scudero turned into Paul Molitor. And Pagan is still, for me, Pagan's still the key. Get him on base. Scudero moves him around, and somehow they get that first run on the board. But to get back to the caller, I honestly tell you this, the fans make a difference with this ball club.
Let me thank the caller.
I have a theory about that. Is that can I jump in?
Yeah, please, Mark.
You know, my motto is opinions on demand. And, I thought you're right. The Giants did not play well at home in the early, and certainly in the two Reds games. And then earlier, my theory is those first couple playoff games, too many of the real Giants fans were selling their tickets to casual fans. But once they got back here for these games, these last two games here, the real fans decided to use their tickets. And I thought the noise was a lot more, now some of it was the circumstances, of course, was a lot bigger and the park was a lot more electric, is the term Marty used, and I'd agree, these last two games. And I thought particularly in Game 6, that would have been on Sunday, remember the one play that Cosma, the shortstop, bobbled? And that was the play where Ryan Vogelsong was at the plate, and he squared around the bunt, brought the bat back, and slapped the ball. They call it a slash play. And I think, and Cosma had started moving toward the second base bag, I think it was, because he thought it was a hit and run. He thought the run, he might need to cover that, or it was going to be a bunt. And, you know, I think as the ball came off that bat, the noise, there was like almost a bark of loud noise from the crowd. And I compared it like a guy, you know, trying to carry a plate of dishes across the room, and all of a sudden somebody goes, boo, and he kind of flinches a little bit, just a little bit, and the dishes start falling off. And I thought that was what happened with Cosma, who had a really rough time these last two games at AT&T Park. I think the noise got to him and the crowd got to him. So, yes, at certain points I think a crowd can play a factor, but they've got to be into it from the start. And I thought particularly those first two Cincinnati games, the crowd kind of sat around. Now, the Giants weren't giving them much to cheer about. But I think the crowd in the stadium does become a character in the drama. And I think definitely these last two nights that was the case.
Let me bring in another caller. Ann, join us. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
While we were watching the game last night, my husband and I thought that it would be really cool if the stands could do a Marco Scudero, like Marco Polo kind of thing, you know, with one section going Marco and another section going Scudero and another section going Marco. And another section going, Scudero.
I think we got the idea.
I think the A's fans did that when he played over there, didn't they, Mark?
That's correct. You got it.
Yeah, right. Somehow that hasn't really caught on with the Giants.
No, I
was at game one where people were trying it, and it just didn't take.
That sounds like one of my callers.
Well, maybe it was. Here's Larry from Los Gatos who writes, marriages can dissolve, children can disappoint, and careers can disappear, but victories like these remain as sweet in memory as they did on the day they happened. P.S., don't overestimate Detroit's pitching. Even Baltimore staff made the Yankees look pathetic.
Yeah, and I would say about that, you know, as great as Verlander is, I mean, the Giants in 2010, everybody wrote them off against Cliff Lee or Roy Halladay, and they beat both of them.
And let me tell you, Mark knows this, the A's came within an inch of knocking the Tigers out.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's something, don't forget, the A's chewed up that bullpen for the Tigers, and they gave them everything they could handle. If the A's didn't run into Detroit, the A's would be in the World Series with the Giants.
Well,
right,
speaking
now
of the A's, listener writes, I'm a longtime Giants fan, and I'm an A's fan, too. I always thought Marco Scudero a great pro. Many of us remember him with Oakland, where he was always contributing and acted as a substitute for Crosby and Ellis, so I'm not all surprised that Marco has done so well for the Giants. I'm only surprised that the Red Sox gave him up. Facebook comment from Suki, great game, great team. One similarity between this team and the 2010 Giants is the team mentality and obvious care these guys have for each other. It's moving to watch. It was missing somewhat in 2011, due in large part to Beltran, in my opinion. Sweet justice beating him last night the way we best know how as a team. Ken in Livermore says, as a devout A's fan, I'm extremely jealous of our Cross Bay rivals. If Coco catches a fly ball in Detroit, oh well, he didn't. It could have been an 89 rematch. On paper, Tigers should win it, but I fear the Giants have some magical, supernatural, overflowing with luck momentum going for them. Giants in 7. Ken in Livermore, who can't wait till 2013. And Brian from Mountain View says, 15 minutes into this thing, nobody's yet mentioned that the defense was sensational throughout and it was every bit as important as any factor reference yet. But we did mention that. Maybe it took 16 minutes, but we got to it. Another listener says, when the Giants brought the series back to San Francisco, they looked loose and happy to be still playing, hopping around like little kids on a sugar rush. The Cardinals, in contrast, looked and played tight. David Freese had said they didn't want to go to San Francisco. How much does that come down to manager Bruce Bochy, who very cagily outmanaged both Dusty Baker and Mike Matheny? Baseball is a boys' game played by grown men, and the Giants' exuberance is a joy to watch. A lot of questions here. Well, here's Dave who says, I love Marty, but I respectfully disagree with him. The Tigers can bring out Verlander and Fister two times each. The Giants can only bring out Kane and Vogey once, unless on dangerously short rest. That more than compensates for their bullpen issues. I'm going to cheer my lungs out for the Giants, but I won't be laying any money down on them.
It's an issue. No, there's no question. When you have this rest, now, of course, the Tigers have a week off, and in baseball you like to be playing every day. It goes back to the 1946 World Series, and the Red Sox clinched early, and the Cardinals and Dodgers were in a playoff, and the Red Sox ended up in exhibition games against an all-star team from the American League, and Ted Williams got hit on the elbow. And he couldn't do anything in the World Series. So there's always that theory a week off may stop it. But the caller is and the writer is absolutely correct. Why the Tigers are a favorite in this World Series, because the Giants could not set up that pitching. But then again, baseball's a day-to-day game. They're still in the rhythm of playing where the Tigers had a week off.
Well, a following question is, a listener writes on our website, how much of a handicap do the Giants have versus Detroit, who had 5 days to rest?
Well, that it could be an issue. And, Mark, you know that. In baseball, you like to play every single day. And this happened to Detroit before. When they played the Cardinals, they had some time off and they couldn't catch the ball in the World Series. And this is an issue that has come up before.
Another issue, and Mark, let me go to you on this. Listener named Kim says, last night was nothing less than thrilling. I'm so glad the game played out without a rain delay. But can you talk about what will have to happen to get the field in shape by tomorrow?
Oh, you know what? That's not going to be a problem. And I was there last night writing late until 11:30, and they had 10 guys working on that field. You know, the rain stopped not long after the game, and they were already at work with shovels and rakes out there. They dug out the part of the infield dirt that was muck, and I think we're replacing it with with better dirt, if that's, I don't know what the right term is. And they were already grooming the field last night. That field, you know, it's a fairly new stadium. It drains very well. And they put the tarp on the field last night after they did all the grooming and stuff necessary. The teams are scheduled to work out there this afternoon. From what I can tell and see, they'll be able to do that just fine. It shouldn't be an issue.
Well, here's another issue. Dan Fust, maybe you can opine on this. A number of listeners are asking to speculate on who the DH will be, and, of course, Hector Sanchez is mentioned. But Rob says maybe Bochy will have Sandoval DH and start Arias.
I think that would probably be a good move. He likes to use Arias for defensive purposes. And obviously, once again, I mean, it's very interesting. In 2010, Pablo had put on so much weight and his hitting and his defense suffered. Now, of course, like Marty's saying, his bat has woken up and you got to have him in the lineup. I don't doubt that immediately after they stop playing, they're going to put him back into one of these diet regimens like they did in 2010. But I think, yeah, that's probably a good bet. Arias, they have a lot of confidence in and would like to see him hitting.
And we'll go to another caller. That's you, Carol. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say how unbelievable that game was last night. We weren't there, but we were at home. Like Marty said, if you weren't at the stadium, you still felt the electricity through the television. It was probably unbelievable. We watch every single game on TV. One thing I think that really adds to the Giants is the announcing of Miller, Fleming, Kruk, and Kipe. If you don't get energy off of their calls, it's just nuts. And I contrasted that to listening to turning the TV on at the last moment rather than listening to
the
radio.
You mean to hear those Cardinal supporting announcers?
And then one guy goes, and Scudero catches the ball, and the Giants have won the pennant. You know, and it's just like, oh, my God. But then listening again to KNBR early this morning where they had that music clip, you know, the montage that guy did.
Carol, there's a rule in radio. You never give props to the competition. But I got to tell you, those guys on KNBR, including Marty Lurie, are great. They're just top-notch.
The way those announcers call the game just gets you so into it. It's just amazing. And the fans and the whole Giant experience is awesome.
Thank you for that. And here's a tweet from Zach who says, test Marty Lurie's knowledge of how many teams have ever faced all right-handed starting pitchers as the Giants will with the Reds, Cards, Tigers.
Boy, well, that's a good question. I'd have to do a little research on that one. But I'll test him. All right. Shortstops. Now, this Pete Cosma had a tough series, really. And you look back in baseball history, there's a very famous shortstop, and Michael, maybe you remember him, 1925.
That's
Roger Peckinpah.
A little after my time. But
Roger Peckinpah. This is the worst shortstop playing I've ever seen. And it, really, in baseball history, you go back, look it up, 1925. He was the American League MVP. He made eight errors in the World Series, and they consider it the worst shortstopping ever in a World Series. So this Pete Cosma came close, I must tell you.
You saw that, Marty?
No. I thought Michael, but no, I'm only teasing him. I get those jokes all the time, Mark. You know that.
Here's another tweet. I almost must note how the Giants season turned around when Melky got busted for PED. So glad San Francisco didn't let him come back. And that's been mentioned many times, Mark Purdy. I mean, how the team came together despite the fact that they had the league leader in terms of batting average, busted.
That's another angle to this season. And keep in mind, one reason that the Giants are opening the World Series at home tomorrow is because the National League won the All-Star game, and the National League, one reason they won the All-Star game was because of Melky Cabrera's performance in the All-Star game. And he put them in position, he wanted to help them win a lot of games. It was curious when he was suspended, the way he acted, where he did not, usually in those situations, and the Giants had another player this year the same thing happened to, Guillermo Mota, the pitcher. When that happens, guys usually will talk to the team and say, I'm sorry, keep playing hard, I hope to be back after my suspension. Cabrera just kind of went out the back door, never said anything to anybody, and I think that the Buster Posey, Matt Cain, some of the other leaders in that locker room said, the hell with that guy, we don't need him, and we're going to show we don't need him. And that was kind of a motivating force on some level for a lot of those guys in the locker room. So that was that's a real interesting twist. I think Marty says this, I know I say it, the baseball season is like a long novel, each game's a chapter. But that's been some real interesting chapters, the whole Melky Cabrera stuff.
Yeah, well, here, Dan Faust, is an observation from a listener named Allison, and since you're the author of a book about that includes the 2010 Giants, she opines the following. Part of what made the 2010 Giants so great and what has carried over to the 2012 Giants is their band of brothers, I'm doing it for the guy next to me, all for one and one for all team spirit. They've said it in every interview, and the fans feel it too. They are not a team of big-name, high-dollar players. They're a team of cast-offs and misfits. They could make excuses for each other, but instead they lift each other up and believe in each other, and it's absolutely inspiring and exciting to watch. Sometimes the good guys do finish first. Go Giants.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly true. And the other thing that I loved about the 2010 team, when the 2010 team won the World Championship, no Giants team had ever won the World Series in San Francisco. And my own theory was they did it because Dwayne Kuiper at KNBR had hung that label of torture on the team. And they rather than like any other Giants team in the past where they kind of got into those crunch time situations and folded, they owned it and they lived for it and they thrived on it. And they were used to, there they were, they could have won the division on the last, 3 days before the season ended. They waited till the last minute. And this team almost was feeling like they weren't going through that torture. They cruised to the division title. They had overcome every obstacle. And yet here they are again, going down 2-0 to the Reds, 3-1 to the Cardinals and coming back. And I think there really is something that's forged in that crucible that brings them to victory.
Deborah on Facebook says, in response to the caller, we're all screaming Marco Scudero chant every time he was up. Maybe the sound doesn't carry in the media or the field club, but it was very spirited and loud. And Ken says, I think the Giants owe a big thank you to the Washington Nationals for benching Strasburg. And another listener writes, please comment on the umpires not calling a rain delay and the St. Louis manager not demanding it.
Well, I think they just wanted to get that game over with. TV and everything else, they didn't want to have to put the tarp on and have a 3-hour rain delay for the last out.
It was 8-0 at that point.
Yeah, but boy, if Halliday had hit a ground ball.
I've never seen anything like that in watching baseball all the years of watching a rain like that.
I was afraid that I think he wanted to let Javier Lopez get that last out, and then Lopez, I don't know, he couldn't grip the ball, but he threw walked the batter, and they wound up having
to bring in Romo. I want to say one thing, Michael. Baseball is a simple game. You have to catch the ball, hit the ball. When you pitch well, which the Giants did, you have a good bullpen, which the Giants have. You get outs with runners in scoring position, which the Giant pitchers did. Cain and Zito were in trouble. They didn't let it get away. And then the spirit helps as well. But you have to do those things. You have to catch the ball, hit the ball, and get occasional hits when it matters. And that's what this ball club does.
Yeah, it always reminds me of when they talk about restaurants, what about the ambiance and what it comes down to often is the food, even
yes,
more than anything else.
Yes, it's a simple game.
But here's David.
Well, the way I put it, and pardon me if I interrupt Professor Lurie, but they play the game properly. It's that simple. You play it properly. You make the throw to the right base. You make the plays that you need to make. It is not a complicated game. but you've got to play it properly. And it drives me crazy when teams don't play it properly. It's been really fun to watch the Giants play it properly.
Well, here's another.
I would take exception with, you know, comparing the Giants cruised this year. I don't know that they cruised. They had 31 one-run victories this year. That's the second most in all of Major League Baseball this year, behind the Reds. So, you know, it wasn't all easy for them, but they found a way to win those one-run games. In many ways, this was more torture than 2010.
Yeah, there was some torture in this, especially in the postseason. You could call it torture. Mark Purdy, again, sports columnist with San Jose Mercury News. And here's a question for you, Dan Foss, from a listener in New York, David, who says this may be another element that we have to figure in. Can you talk about the impact of social media on the Giants? Mm. It seems like Giants have really used Twitter hashtags nicely to gin up national attention to the team.
Yeah, well, obviously, this is we're in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley. It's the birthplace of social media. Twitter is right here in San Francisco, and so I think the Giants are very savvy in their use of that, and I think there is a lot of interest.
It's made a difference, I think. Yeah, and here's Mark from Berkeley, who says, the reason most of us watch the game instead of the debate is we already know who we're going to vote for. We didn't know who would win the game. Go Giants. Steven from San Rafael says, I'm so happy for the Giants and all their fans that we're going to another World Series. One comment regarding pitching against Detroit. Apparently, they do much worse against left-handed pitching, and also they say Bumgarner has discovered and fixed a mechanical flaw, so I would expect he would pitch in game two.
Perhaps. I mean, that could happen. They may want to use Lincecum out of the bullpen, and that's a very good email because I looked it up. They did struggle a little bit more against left-handed pitching, so maybe the Giants will throw Bumgarner in game two, but we'll see.
We'll see. Didi tweets, I went to game six when Fox broadcaster said we seem like a European soccer crowd. We also really love early runs. And interesting question on the website. Do you think Melky will get a playoff share?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No,
definitely.
He'll get probably a percent. Well, he may even get a full share. I know his salary is prorated to the, you know, his time and the active roster. But I want
to be able to put that into his website. More,
right? The fake website. Yeah. But one thing before we go, and what you talked to Dan about the social media, why the crowd is so electric. Everybody is connected now. Yeah, everyone's tweeting back and forth to everyone else. Hey, look at your show and things like everyone who goes to the ballpark is connected, and they do it through social media. It's different than 2010. There's more of an ambiance between the fans now at the ballpark.
All right, we got a little time, seconds literally. Marty Lurie says 7-game series. What do you say, Mark Purdy?
Oh, man, I think the Tigers win this, actually. I think the Giants' pitching rotation's messed up because of the having to take them all the way.
All right, let's ban Mark Purdy from any further appearances on Forum. we've got seconds left. Dan Foss?
Giants in six.
All right, we've got predictions. We've got talk about last night. We've got thanks to you all. Thanks to Marty Lurie from KNBR, Dan Foss, author of Giants Past and Present, and Mark Purdy from the Bay Area News Group and the San Jose Mercury News, and Larry Bear, whom we spoke to earlier. Thanks to you, our listeners, for all of us here at KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.